Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy. Tonight, I have another great guest. Her name is Judy Oakes. She's an author, has quite a story to tell, so we're going to bring Judy on right away. So, hi, Judy. Welcome to the show.
I thank you so much. I've been looking so forward to this, Nancy.
Good. I'm excited that you're on. You know, you've written a few books here, and I think a lot of the people who are listeners on this show would probably be very interested in finding out all the books that you have written. And then after you just like kind of give the titles a little bit, give a little kind of just a brief thing about each book, and then we're going to talk a little bit about you as to how you got to write these books.
All right. Well, the first book is entitled 2012, The Fourth Dimension. The second book in the trilogy is entitled 2012, Plan ET. And the third book, which I'm in the process of writing right now, is entitled 2012 Reality Revolution. And the words evolution and the last word of revolution are magnified.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they all have a very similar theme. It's, you know, considering probably 100 different topics in each book. And the first book has primarily to do with the prophecies of Gordon Michael Scallion and the American Indians. And a lot of scientific information is integrated into the first book as well. The second book has to do, was more or less inspired by Zachariah Sitchin's The Earth Chronicles. And it has to do, have an interpretation on a metaphysical level of our relationship, not only with the Anokai, but the Greys and other extraterrestrial groups. In the first book, our relationship with the Pleiadians is, you know, explored to quite an extent, and also what happened on Mars. The third book will have to do primarily, I think, because I'm only about a third of the way through it, how we basically kind of pull all of this together. Everything corresponds to the end of the Mayan calendar. I would say there are probably anywhere from 100 to or more topics in each book, so that if you don't like a certain section, you can move on to another section very readily. There are dialogues, there are characters, there are families of five different ethnic origins. So how they interpret the information that's given to them is very, very different. Some are offended, some are very enthusiastic, but they're having their daily life and daily challenges alongside becoming informed about all of this information. And there's a lot of dysfunction. It's very real. And one child who has Asperger's syndrome is on the hero's journey. And so it will be his task in the third book to pull it all together. But when I finished them, it really kind of occurred to me, Nancy, that the first book dealt with preparing for Earth changes and all that might occur before the year 2012 on a physical level. The second book is on a psychological, emotional level, and the third book will be on a spiritual level without getting into spiritual terms, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Which they're pretty important in each aspect that you're describing.
Well, yeah, they are important, but the audience that I am seeking for this is primarily an age group of 12 to adult. They're more or less like introductory books. There's the reason that the characters are so varied and whatever is to obtain the interest of this very young age group so that they will explore different aspects of metaphysics, so to speak. And they have the right to reject it or go on to the next phase or to make further inquiries on the internet, you know, of a certain topic that they might find interesting. And plus, I've tried to substantiate a lot of scientific information alongside when I've had that verification.
I think it's probably important that you did the scientific stuff. stuff, because a lot of times, like when I do the readings, and people say, what do you see, Nancy? It's like, well, let me tell you, not everything's going to be all hunky-dory and roses here. Believe me, there's a lot of changes that have to occur. But, you know, I don't have any kind of scientific, you know, background to say, okay, this is, you know, what's going on. I only have what's been told to me through my guides and my angels.
Right.
And it kind of corresponds with each of your books, maybe not in exact same way, but with the changes that I actually foresee that are coming, whether we like them or not.
Right. And I have not, how can I say this? I've tried so hard to mention the negative aspects, you know, but not to make that a point of drama and trauma.
Right, because you don't want to do that.
No, because the most important factor, which is revealed in the third book, is that how do we deal with fear, you know, and what is this thing called polarity integration, so to speak? How do we develop an attitude to life without preaching? You know, because the primary characters are children, and so how they interpret things has a lot of humor. And yet at the same time, children have this resiliency, you know, to come back and to find solutions. And so many of the topics that I tried to cover, it's like the Blu-ray children. Instead of describing what is a Blu-ray child, Blu-ray children actually exist, and you see how they behave, how they think, what their gifts are in the book. Instead of saying, after 2012, perhaps only three rays will return to the Earth, instead of saying something, which was a direct quote from Gordon Michael Skyan, instead of putting it that way, the children invent a play about the afterlife, an impromptu play, and each one contributes, depending upon their background, what they think should be inserted.
Mm-hmm.
And they come from totally different perspectives. And, you know, we have not only a white family that basically comes from a metaphysical background. We have a black family that comes from a Muslim background. We have a Hispanic family that is Catholic and yet finds out that they have Mayan ancestry. There is an Oriental family, they're Buddhist, and then there's an American Indian family. And, you know, all of their prophecies and how they all get together at these cultural exchange programs and the difficulties that they have not only within their own families and daily life, but also the misinterpretations that go on,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the information that's been given them, which is sometimes humorous and sometimes it leads to problems.
Okay. Which that's always going on now as the Earth is changing anyway.
Yes.
You mentioned Gordon Michael Skyan.
Yes.
And the American Indians. Can you give us a little idea of what maybe Gordon Michael Skyan's idea is as compared to the American Indians?
Well, it was really interesting because the whole book started, the first book, when I was tutoring a young boy of 10 years old, and he was being homeschooled, and his mother said, why don't you let him lead you to anything that he's interested in? And I thought, this is fabulous. You know,
mm-hmm.
this is going to be so much fun for 3 hours every Friday morning. And the young boy was interested in mythology. And then he went on to say, I want to study astronomy and astrology. And he basically led me to all of this information. And then his family was planning a vacation to the Grand Canyon. And he said, now I want to study the American Indians. And I said, from what perspective? From the mythological, you know, having to do with their creation myths, whatever. He said, no, I want to know about their prophecies. When he returned to public school, I didn't know what to do. I was so sad the project had ended. And I said, you know, I am going to continue writing what we went through together, you know, mm-hmm. our little explorations, and, you know, see what happens. And what I found out was Gordon Michael Skyan refers to the new grid, which is really critical. The old grid had 12 major cells with 5 minor cells, and that equals 60. The new grid, which is superimposed upon this, has 24 interlocking major cells with 10 minor cells, and that means that we now have 240 cells above the old grid. Mm-hmm. The Earth changes, if we refer to them, the melting of the ice caps, earthquakes, different things that are happening on a geophysical level, have to do with the difficulty of the new grid coming in. And the American Indians call this the blueprint. And they also are the first to say that we have extraterrestrial DNA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just really interesting from different perspectives of seeing how they correspond. The American Indians say originally we were from Lyra and then from Pleiades. And then as I was going back over years and years of taking Gordon Michael Scallion's periodicals and reading his book, Notes from the Cosmos, I saw all of these correlations coming forth.
When it comes to correlations, like, because I know that the Mayas, even the American Indians, they really do have a lot of the same prophecies. It's just that they've not been told in that way. You know, like they have the Mayans say the calendar ends in 2012, and, you know, does that mean the world is ending? The Indian side of it goes, there's no, there's going to be changes, but with the changes, we have new growth.
Exactly. And I think that the American Indians call it the Age of Illumination. Gordon Michael Scallion calls the new age coming forth the Age of Intuition. And the reason that the calendar had to end on that date is that they knew that their astronomical placement and their relationship to the Pleiades would no longer exist. So that's why the calendar had to end. And they never saw it as forecasting the end of the world. It was more or less a transition period. Actually, we're in the transition period right now, and the Mayans call it the merge of the dark and the light.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with learning how to rethink how we interpret life, of having a certain attitude towards life, so to speak. But one of the things I know that I'm working on right now is the information for the third book having to do with John Major Jenkins and his information that is so exciting, that we went through three major revolutions that we are aware of. One was the agricultural, one was the industrial, right now we're in the technological. But according to a mathematical model, 61 or more of these revolutions will occur before the end of the Mayan calendar. So we're talking about this quantum leap in consciousness.
Which, again, is important because people need to wake up here.
I know.
You know, and like when I was a child, And I wrote a book. It's called Raised by Angels, and it's my autobiography.
Yes.
It's pretty intense sometimes, and some of it's funny, and some of it's kind of weird, and some people think, man, this lady's nuts. But, you know, however people think, that's okay. But when I was 10, I remember getting all kinds of visions, and it really scared, you know, the living you-know-what out of me, because at 10, I was seeing the year 2010. I know everybody else based it on 2012. But I kept seeing 2010, and I saw all these changes. I saw Earth changes, and I saw, you know, a lot of people not necessarily, you know, staying on Earth as,
right,
you know, as we know it, and just
right,
many, many changes going on, a lot of chaos, you know, just a lot of things that people need to know that they don't have to go through that if they just relax and go with the flow, basically.
Yes.
But as a child, you know, you're trying to interpret these things that are coming through, and you really don't tell anybody because it's like, well, they're going to think I'm nuts, you know?
Yeah.
So you just kind of hold it inside, and you watch as times change. Like I was telling one of my friends about some of my visions, and I didn't really understand them, you know, a whole bunch because,
mm-hmm,
again, I was 10 years old, and I didn't really talk to anybody about anything. But he brought me a couple maps over one day. He said, Nancy, I think you need to take a look at this. And I'm looking at him. I go, man, that's real familiar in my head. And I'm thinking, maybe that's what I saw when I saw different things falling apart and breaking apart. You know?
Yeah.
And it was the changing of the earth, you know, according to Edgar Cayce and the Matrix Institute. And how one was more scientific, which was the Matrix Institute.
Right.
And then, of course, Cayce's, which was all prophecy. But they really matched.
Yeah.
Almost identical. And I went, ooh, holy cow. You know, and so the things that I saw as a child, I see happening now, you know, but it's really still hard to explain to a lot of people who are sitting here either living in denial or not believing that there could be those kind of changes or whatever. And it's good to get as many books out there as we can, whether they're, you know, more scientific, you know, a little humor to them, a little fictitious, you know, whatever, so that people have a different look of all possibilities coming in.
Well, especially because even though you know, centered on the year 2010, which could be, or it could be 2012, we're talking about something which is anywhere from 3 to 5 years away.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a critical, absolutely critical situation if you are not informed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how you received the maps, actually the two maps, one by Cayce and one by, you know, the Matrix Institute.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because when my husband died, he and I were both very involved in the psychic community in Los Angeles, and I knew that there was something that needed to be addressed, and so I asked one of the individuals to come over shortly after his death, and I said, there's something that you're supposed to tell me that's going to happen after the turn of the century. And he said, oh, earth changes, that must be it. And I said, yes, because I have to keep a promise. And he guided me towards getting, you know, books by Cayce, which of course had the map, which
mm-hmm.
you saw. And I felt so responsible for my children, being a single parent of a 2- and 3-year-old at that point, that my immediate response was fear. And I basically fled to New Zealand, which was qualified as being a safety zone, for a period of almost 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long time to come with two terms, you know, of returning to the United States. And when I did, it was with a commitment that at some point in time, if given the opportunity, I would love to relate, you know, or be of help in any dimension. So finally, in my life of 64 years at this point, because I went through such a violent reaction to the information, I lived through it so I can have empathy with those who are going to greet some of this subject matter with disdain, is that I have found some answers that were highly therapeutic for myself and for my family, and I just want to share them.
Mm-hmm. But again, it's good because I think, again, the more information people can read or hear about or see or listen to, actually the better it works. Now, when you're doing the second book, The Earth Chronicles, okay, you talked about how it's more the psychological and emotional level of, you know, considering the changes still going on. So we went from kind of the physical level of the
right.
Earth changes now to psychological. Do you think that a lot of people, as these changes are happening, and they're happening now, okay,
right.
are finally starting to wake up? Maybe it's because of, you know, what Al Gore has done or whatever, but they're starting to wake up better now than they did, say, you know, maybe 5 years ago.
Yes, I do. And you know where I see a lot of change coming about? Because my children are in their, you know, late 20s at this point. And we socialize with, you know, individuals who are even in their early 20s and even late teens. And I'm a house parent at a therapeutic boarding school where the students are 16 to 21. Their hopes, their aspirations, their dreams of the future, it's all with good intent. They are putting a value system into effect in their daily lives which is most admirable. And the fact that we have had things which are displeasing, so to speak, in our lives recently, the fact of the oil crises, the fact that we're looking now more as a global community, fortunately, than the isolated me, myopic syndrome, I think that there is such a resilience and such a beauty in the young people of today that they will create, you know, the environment that's needed.
Mm-hmm. I really think they will, as long as other people don't stand in their way.
Right.
Okay. And people who listen to my show know this. I have a 501c called the Child's Miracle Mind.
Yeah.
And I have a really tough time with all of these young kids and all these new kids being on the Ritalin and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of them may need it, but believe me, the majority do not. And that's my thing, okay? And so
mm-hmm.
when, you know, I hear how people are trying to basically control the younger ones that are coming in without giving them a chance to really tell us what they know, I think is kind of a fool's part that they're playing.
Yes.
And I think they should listen, and I think they should open their minds and, you know, let these kids tell us what they already know.
Oh, I agree with you so much. For a period of about 6 years, I was tutoring children who were diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, Asperger's.
Mm-hmm.
And various parents at one time or another decided to stop the medications and to see what happened. And it was amazing the transformation once they were off of the medication that took place. It was like dealing with a different personality.
Mm-hmm.
And although they had difficulty focusing, so to speak, on, you know, their schoolwork or whatever, the way that they see life and the way they're such a purity. There was really such a purity with them,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And their focus, you know, their focus, I don't think is that they can't focus. I think their mind is multitasking at a level that we aren't even close to yet.
Yeah, someone once said that they are three-dimensional. They
mm-hmm.
see things three-dimensionally, and that's our difficulty because we don't understand that.
And I agree with that. I mean, because, you know, I deal with a lot of kids. I have a granddaughter who's one of those kids.
Mm-hmm.
7 going on 30, okay?
Yes.
You know, and she is a pleasure, and she's a chore, and she's a lot of things, you know. But I look at other kids, and I go, you know, I wonder what's really going on in their head, because you can just feel and see those little brains turning, but yet I don't know if they know how to put it out there or if they know if they should put it out there. But it's going to be coming out because that's one of the ways that's going to help us put this world back together, in my opinion.
Well, you know, I read a very interesting article, I think it was about a month ago, and it was actually talking about children with ADD, ADHD, Asperger's, and they said that they are actually our bridge.
Mm-hmm.
They were incarnated at this point in time to be of assistance, and they knew they would not be necessarily appreciated or understood, but their presence here is so instrumental.
And that, again, I agree with 100%. That's what I'm saying. They just need to lighten up on these kids, let them kind of show us what they know.
Right.
In your second book, I was reading a little bit about what you sent to me.
Yeah.
And the first book talked about the American Indians' prophecies. This one talks about the Cherokee prophecies.
Yes, which is actually, their calendar is kind of a cross between the Aztec and the Mayan. And they have one of the most beautiful phrases. It's called the times and untimes. And how they use it for actually going to the past, to the present, or to the future. And how this particular design is basically a snake in the heavens. But it can take on the appearance of a rattlesnake. snake. Mm-hmm. And at the end, they talk about the fact that it's almost, and I wish I could pronounce it correctly, they are awaiting the return of the Pale One. And it has a tie-in with Quetzalcoatl. That sounds good enough. I can spell it.
Okay.
I can't pronounce it. And that this return has a very interesting concept in that it also, Quetzalcoatl has a relationship to Kukulkan in the Mayan. And the Kukulkan, when you break it down semantically or into, you know, the little, I forget the word, it means basically having to do with the kundalini. It has to do with the chakra system and the awakening of the serpent. And the serpent in most cultures is a revered object of wisdom. I think only in certain forms of Christianity is it looked at as a negative force, so to speak. But this serpent of the snake or the rattlesnake or any of that, especially to doing with, you know, Mesoamerica, is a sign that is supposed to happen in the heavens, and yet simultaneously, because the spine is looked at as a serpent in the human being, an awakening. And this crossing is supposed to happen on December the 21st, the year 2012, and it will appear in the heavens, according to their calendar, mm-hmm. which is just like the calendar of the Mayans.
Right. Now, you also, in the first book, you talk about astrology, but in the second book, you talk about numerology.
Yes. And I thought that that might be important, too. We go into the number 7. That's very important. And, you know, all the ways in which the number 7 we can recognize. And then it also goes into the number 12, but it's not really 12, it's 12 around 1, which is 13. And it gives us kind of an understanding about, if we put things together numerically, how, which plane we're of existence we're, that we can expect activity on, or what, there's a hidden symbol there. And it's funny, too, because it was even suggested, because I try to go full spectrum in my research. In other words, it's not as if I'm trying to say, this is what I hope you believe. It's saying, okay, here are 5 different interpretations of this. Mm-hmm. Are any of these palatable to you? So, but 2012 could actually be a tone, or it could be a designation, not necessarily that it is a date. And so, you know, just trying to put many, many different ideas out there to see which one might be appealing to the reader so that they will do their own research. In fact, basically, when my son and my daughter and I got together to write these books, my daughter envisioned characters and, you know, unique backgrounds and characteristics with each of them. And my son was the one who said, too much information, you love research. We have about, you know, a stack 2 feet high, and you have to remember that there's a story going on with the information. When you self-publish, you have to make a choice. If you say, all right, I want the price to be $18, you can only have 180 pages. So you make choices each with each page. Do I describe the dress that so-and-so is wearing, or do I get the information across?
Mm-hmm.
But there is a definite plot in each of the books. But, you know, we had a phenomenal time, you know, putting the books together, and it's still like a family activity, and each of us is extremely participatory.
Well, I think it sounds like a riot, personally. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
It really has been. It's been most enjoyable.
You also talk about the presence of aliens.
Oh, yes.
Now, a lot of people, I should say, some people are going to sit back and go, you guys have just got to be out of your ever mind.
That's right.
To think that there is anything other than us wonderful people in this solo system.
Yeah.
And I say to those people, can you be so arrogant to think that you're the only ones that are alive and have a brain here?
I know. It was about 2 years ago I started reading Sitchin's books, The mm-hmm. Earth Chronicles, and I thought that he put forth an absolutely incredible argument that intellectually, after you finish reading, 14 of his books or 500 pages each,
mm-hmm.
I think it would be almost impossible to negate the existence or the contributions of the Anokai, whom he so vividly describes. The American Indians believe that we have had, you know, participation from Sirius, from the Pleiades, from the point of origin, Lyra, Orion, Mars, it goes on and on. Gordon Michael Scallion has spoken of the Martian influence and the in particular the Pleiadian influence. But I think more than anything, because I think we have this prototype or this little image, which is almost a stereotype, of aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And that they are embodied, which they don't have to be, and that we have either a good relationship with them or we have a bad relationship with them. And as far as I have been able to understand the various relationships with them, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
is that they are working on their own evolutionary obstacles, challenges, just as we are. It's just that we are more or less integrated and have been because Earth was colonized a long time ago, but there is no documentation left of that. And I think in the second book, I kind of alluded to the fact that just because I believe this premise, and I leave it to the reader to reject, or it really doesn't matter. They might just find it entertaining, and that's just fine. Is that so much has been said about the Anokai in general as being negative. And two of the children, who are much younger in the story, decide to write this horrifying comic strip that is, you know, high contrast. It's a lot of sensationalism, so to speak, and exaggeration about what they did that was bad and very little credit to what was good. And then later another group of the children who were older get together and they say, okay, then you better put something in perspective. What was good? And it's basically choosing to accept the good and the bad and coming to some type of resolve that it was just a relationship genetically,
mm-hmm.
that an experiment, so to speak, of our DNA, which Sitchin, you know, has provided us with. But it also does not mean that we do not have a relationship with our Creator, however you choose to interpret that on an individual basis.
Mm-hmm.
I think that some people might feel that if you accept the premise that we may have alien DNA, that that makes us less, or that it nullifies a relationship spiritually.
Okay, I don't agree. I don't think that way. I think we definitely got some aliens around here.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's not a doubt in my mind. You know, that they're here, they've been here, they're going to stay here, and, you know, they're going to help get through whatever we need to get through because they are much more advanced than what we are.
Right. I agree with you on that.
You know, and so a lot of the technology that we so-called have discovered really has been through what we have learned from the alien technologies that they already have.
Right. Are you referring to the Greys in particular?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. And also, there's kind of a misinterpretation, I think, with the Greys, too.
I think they're all misinterpreted.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, as I understand it, their civilization went through such devastating experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I read that really impressed me was that those who are abducted, that the Greys are actually looking for a solution so that they do not die out, being as they have no emotional body.
Mm-hmm.
And so these hybrid experiences are actually agreed to before humans incarnate, because they're finding, you know, it's just like Star Trek. It's like Spock on Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
who was the more logical of the group and interpreted he was of value because he gave a different insight.
Right.
So a lot of these things, referring to the Greys, we have to look at it in perspective that to lose a species, so to speak, is a permanent loss.
Mm-hmm.
And that perhaps if we looked at it in another light, that the pact was made before you came in, even though you can't remember,
mm-hmm.
you know, before you came into this life, and that you are assisting them because they have lost their emotional context. And they, I also read that they were cloning themselves because they can't reproduce.
Right. And I've heard a lot of that. I mean, I, of course, can't prove it.
Yeah.
But it does make sense.
Yeah.
You know, as to why the Greys would be around here, because our emotions here are the things that keep us going, whether it be fear, love,
right.
hate. I mean, we're packed with emotions.
Oh, yes. We're bountiful.
Another part of your second book that I found kind of interesting, you said something about the existence of the Philadelphia experiment.
Yes.
And validity.
Yeah, and I wanted to throw in the conspiracies because it had to do with time travel.
Mm-hmm.
And it also involves the Greys, and it talks about perhaps information that has been kept from the general public. But then the History Channel and the Discovery Channel also bring these subjects up. But I haven't seen a program yet about the Philadelphia experiment or the Montauk experiment. But oddly enough, there is these projects supposedly ended. But then I became informed in the third book about Project HAARP, HAARP, which is considered the continuation of the two former ones.
Which it probably needs to be continued in order for it to get finished.
Yeah.
And one way or another here. Okay.
One way or another. Exactly. But, you know, there was a mind control aspect to
mm-hmm.
that, too.
Yeah. Well, we still have a lot of mind control going on. I just don't think people realize that.
Oh, I agree.
You know, and I think people are starting to wake up, but we really do. I mean, we've been programmed to stay in fear. We've been programmed to believe everything we hear in the medium, but now we're starting to say, oh, that's not true. You know, so we've been programmed many times over and not necessarily in the right way.
And it's so hard to be a free thinker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have such busy schedules. It's so easy to turn on the news and just take it verbatim as opposed to making inquiries or, mm-hmm. you know, getting a balanced perspective of any subject. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I feel like time is absolutely racing by. That
oh,
time
sure.
is no longer time. It's accelerated.
Mm-hmm. I try not to listen to the news.
Uh-huh.
Because I have a hard time with a lot of the things that they're trying to get us to believe.
Yes.
So I try not to listen. But I do agree that time is really, it's speeding up a lot. But again, in order for us to make the changes that we must make, not that we need to or have to, but must make,
yes.
it has to speed up.
Yes.
And a lot of people, because they're not going to want to go with that speed, are probably going to kind of be lost in the shuffle, but that's also their choice, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In your second book, you also talk about the origin of the conflict in the Middle East.
Oh, yes, that was, I came across a very interesting article, and I had a lot of communication with one woman who is clairvoyant, and it was a very, very unusual premise, and I looked at it, and I thought, this is, I can agree with this. She said that basically the conflict between the Arab people and people who are Jewish came about on Orion. And it was during the time that they were basically fleeing from some of the catastrophes and war zones that were happening on Orion. And that when they came into the Earth as a refuge, that was almost an incredibly intense part of their cellular memory bank. And that they kept choosing to reincarnate in the same area. But the problem was, they were almost like one polarity. Let's see if you have a triangle in front of you, and one side is good at the bottom of the base of the triangle, the other one is bad. The good one, they also say that you are a victim. Now, the bad side may say, okay, I'm the oppressor. Or the good one may say, I am altruistic, I'm selfless, I'm always thinking of others. And on the bad side of the polarity triangle, it can say, I am selfish. So you have this triangle, and what you're trying to do is to move from the base of the triangle to the tip, where basically everything, good, bad, all polarities are integrated. Now, supposedly, both these groups see themselves as the victim. So they are one side split off amongst themselves, and that the only way, supposedly, that they could have adjusted this would have been to reincarnate on the other side. Mm-hmm. So that they would understand the other side's views, which supposedly some did, some didn't. But it is a continuation of a situation on Orion that was never resolved in another time frame, which unfortunately is still going on now in the present time on Earth. I thought that was a very interesting insight.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's pretty good. There's a lot of people who I'm sure that are listening to us, Judy, that are going to go, where are they coming from?
Well, we can talk about more normal things, too.
Nah, that would be boring. Also, in the second book, because there's a lot of things in your second book. Now, I have not read, you know, your book, but from what you sent, there's a lot of things that I think many people would really, you know, be interested in reading once they have it. And there's a part that says the New World Order,
mm-hmm.
about the existence of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you maybe talk a little bit about that, and then we're going to give out all of your information so that people can find you, find your books and everything they need, okay?
Yeah, well, the New World Order, as I understand it, it gets into another wonderful conspiracy episode about how, in a, I think it was in the 70s, that this very wealthy elite international group decided to establish colonies on the moon and also on Mars because they felt that the Earth was going to go through Earth changes. And they thought that would be a very wise thing to do. However, it is forecast that the other planets go through these Earth changes in advance of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so one story said that when they were on Mars and they had set up these enormous facilities, that many of them were destroyed because of different activities happening on Mars, and that then there was a change of attitude. And the New World Order is basically composed of those in power who may not be political figures, but they are very wealthy, or they are incredibly astute in their chosen fields. And there are also places like Mount Weather, whatever, that, you know, are for the elite, or where we have an alternative government set up underground. And some theories feel that there has been a change of heart by the New World Order, that's why we've had programs like the X-Files and all of the... There's such a popularity right now with themes about aliens or individuals who are starseeds, such as in the program Heroes, where, you know,
mm-hmm.
where you are actually a presence from the future incarnating now. So that's my view on the New World Order, whether it has improved and is more benevolent. You know, I don't know, but I did include that one article in it anyway.
There's also a belief, and I don't know who started it or who said it, that the world itself is basically controlled by what they would call a secret society of 12 people. Do you know anything about that?
Well, that I don't know. But, you know, it's getting back to that 12 around 1 again,
mm-hmm.
you know, in numerology. I do know that many, many years ago, I was in England, and I attended a convention. And Rockefeller was the head speaker at this convention, and I was dating someone, and so I was there, not necessarily for the initial parts of the convention, but because I was pursuing a relationship. And I know that at that time that the program was basically given out to all of the members, which were all male, and they were represented from all nations. And they were telling you when to buy gold, when to sell real estate, when to go into the stock market, whatever, on a 7-year cycle. So in a certain way, I didn't know what that was all about until years later.
Mm-hmm.
But there was definitely a group that was obviously very aware, you know, whether that was the New World Order or just another elitist group.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a few more of those kind of show their face, or at least we'll find out about a few of those that might be coming into view by us normal everyday people.
Yes.
If somebody would like to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Well, by my website.
Okay, do you want to tell everybody what it is?
Sure, it's Manda, M-A-N-D-A, 2012.com. And I write, and my children write, under the pseudonym Amanda. And the reason for it being that Manda is an Aramaic word, and it means knowledge, and it's a Gnostic word. And when we first started on this, we said we don't want to be personalities or accredited with any of the, you know, attention. Primarily because we're not the authors. We may have invented the characters and the plot and integrated, but to refer to ourselves as the authors, we're hoping that perhaps they'll visit some of the, on the first book, there are like 370 quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Very subtle. And it's totally transformed into dialogue. But, you see, we're not clairvoyant. We're not psychic. We're not gifted. We're normal people, you know, so to speak. And so we always felt that we should give or return the credit to where it should be, and that's with the other people who were born with gifts, you know.
Mm-hmm. But believe it or not, Judy, everybody has that psychic ability.
Oh, I know. We just need to cultivate it.
Trusting it and allowing it.
Yes. You need to awaken.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So if they would go onto your website, could they also get your books from the website?
Yes, the website, all you do, it'll show the three book covers. Of course, one isn't written yet, the last one. And you click on the book cover, and then it tells you a description about the book. And then at the very bottom, it tells you how to order from, it'll immediately connect you with the ordering desk at Trafford.
Okay, that's kind of neat. Do you ever go out and do lectures or anything, or, you know, like with groups of people?
I would love to do that.
Cool.
You see, the first book is just on the market as of about 2 weeks ago. The second book will be available in 1 month, and I will probably have the third book finished this summer, but by the time it's edited, whatever, it won't be out until fall of next year. But my ultimate dream was to personally meet, encounter individuals, and I hope that that's somewhere in the future, you know, to discuss with them, to exchange with them. The Mayans have said one of the most important things. They said, this is the time during these, the merge of the light and dark for all people to come together, to share their teaching, share their philosophies, share their religion, share everything, and not react to it, but just assimilate it, you know, and be open to it, to listening. And that's, you know, I would in the future love the opportunity to learn from other people as well.
I think that would actually be great because you have a lot of knowledge. Even though, again, some people may think that we're kind of off the deep end here a little bit, that's okay. You know, they'll catch up with us at some point in time. The other thing that interests me really a lot about you, Judy, is that along with my 501, See a Child's Miracle Mind, I am hoping to start a different kind of school called the School of Now.
Oh.
And if you put now in reverse, it spells one, like you've won, okay?
Yes.
And because you were at the Waldorf, I know that's a different kind of school. I mean, Montessori is one, Waldorf is another one for a lot of the different, you know, quote, the different kids that are there. Could you briefly explain to the people the difference between, let's say, the normal school and a Waldorf school?
Well, the basic difference is that every subject is taught as an art form. And you have a curriculum which involves two languages, whether it's German and Spanish or German and French. And most of the schools are grades 1 through 8, even though there are a lot of pilot schools that are only kindergarten through the third grade. And I read a lot of Steiner extensively, and I'll always be grateful for that opportunity. So I don't want to talk too much about his philosophy on an adult level, so to speak, but rather center on the education. But the education is filled with beauty. It is filled with reverence. The children there that I have seen in comparison, because when I tutor children from private schools, from Montessori, from, you know, the Waldorf system, all systems.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually will tutor children who have, who are considered problem children or have special conditions as well. But the, I think the Steiner system, I know my children went through it grades 1 through 8, gives you an interesting way of looking at things in that, let's say you're studying a war in Europe. Their technique is to provide both sides as opposed to one interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a lot of grievances recently with the public education system because I read all of the material that's in the third, fourth, and fifth grades. And the comment that I hear most frequently, which is so hard for parents at home to fill that gap with their children, is that they are bored or they feel that it's sterile, and the MCAS and different forms of testing, they're feeling such phenomenal pressure. I think some type of experiential teaching in which it's more hands-on, working as a group so that the group is responsible for the success, mm-hmm. as opposed to so many independent projects might be a solution. But something is needed definitely to revolutionize the entire educational system. And then each family can find, you know, their answer that's appropriate for their child. But I give you all the credit for trying to initiate something new, because the children I know from all of these backgrounds, very few are content. They need something new.
I'd say uncontent totally.
Yes. Yes.
Judy, could you give out your website information one more time, because we're almost
out
of time.
Sure. It's Manda, M-A-N-D-A, 2012.com.
Okay, and can you also repeat each name of the books?
The first book is called 2012, The Fourth Dimension. The second book is 2012, Plan ET. And the third book will be 2012, Reality Revolution.
And the last book is due out when?
I think next fall.
Okay, but that's right.
I'm working towards that very diligently.
I'm sure you are, and I think if you're supposed to get it out there by then, I'm sure you'll have a lot of help to do that.
But you know, the reality is, too, is that I have two real jobs, so to speak. So these little books are written in, you know, all time off, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes about a year at least to get the 180 pages.
Yeah, I'm sure. Judy, it has been a pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, I thank you so much, Nancy. I have enjoyed it. It has just been a delight.
Great. And we'll actually stay in touch because, like I said, I have some ideas, and we'll kind of get together, and I'll run them past you, and you can kind of tell me what you think. And
love that.
All right, Judy,
and
you take care.
And thank you so much.
You're very
Alrighty.
Welcome. May God bless all of you that have been listening. Have a very happy, happy 2008. And keep going on, because it's not over yet. Everybody take care. We'll be talking next week. Bye now.
Bye. Bye, Nancy. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. You take care.
I love my time with you.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.